Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyer, is All Things Legal. Give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. You know, this is sort of sports and negotiation, but lawyers negotiate, right? That's a big part of what we do. Part of negotiation is assessing leverage, using leverage appropriately, and then maximizing your deal. Now, that's interesting, and I want to relate that to Mark Ingram. When Mark Ingram was on the free agent market, his legal representative misassessed his leverage. In other words, these are the reports that he told the Saints that he wanted a $7.5 million contract.
Per year.
And he had probably used data that was not comparable in order to evaluate his market value. And so they you know, and I think it was the Saints' preference and also Mark Ingram's preference to stay, all things being equal, for him to stay with the Saints. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think he made a mistake. You know, when you've been in the league 8 years and now you're negotiating years 9, 10, and 11 as a running back, you don't ask for more money.
Well, you have a decrease. You have a greater decrease in your physical, of course. In your physical attributes, because if you're cornerback and running back, those skill sets get affected by age sooner than other positions. Now, what happened was he goes to the Saints and says, "I want $7.4 million." The Saints say, "Heck with that. We're gonna sign Murray. We'll get him for about the same price, a little less, for 4 years." And then. He goes on an open market, and he signs with the Ravens, who is at a price probably the Saints would have signed him for, and
right.
He's a new team,
right.
New
right.
situation, and exactly. And I don't think it's a better situation for him necessarily. I think the Saints was the best situation.
Well, he might be the guy.
Yeah, but he's not the guy. But he has more opportunity to succeed because you have more, I guess, you know, with Drew Brees. Everyone who plays on this team has a better opportunity to succeed because they can't focus on one thing. They can't focus
on. He'll get more carries where he's going.
Yeah, he will. But right. But they're not. He's not necessarily going to succeed. So my only point in this, as far as negotiations are concerned, is that if you're a lawyer or you're a negotiator, if you misassess your leverage that you really have, or you try to play the bluff game, you probably aren't going to prevail 90% of the time. And I think one of the parts of a lawyer, as far as our legal representative or working out some kind of deal, is to be able to assess leverage, use it appropriately, and use it to maximize. But sometimes if you overplay your hand, you have a lot of unintended consequences to occur, because basically what you have is Mark Ingram playing for another team that he probably didn't want to play for,
right?
Because his agent misassessed the market, and it wasn't good for the Saints. It wasn't preferable for the Saints. It wasn't preferable for him.
So
what happened?
Look at Anthony Davis. Got bad advice from his agent to come out and say, "I don't want to be here next year."
Oh, that was idiotic.
Idiotic. And you know, and it's sad because now he's let his teammates down. You've got other people with the don't want to play flu. You know, that are, you know, so this is kind of a throwaway season, and now they're doing what they can to try to lose games so they can get a better draft
pick.
All
he had to do was go and say, look, I'm not going to re-sign, but I'll keep it private. I'll play hard the rest of the year. I want you to move me.
Right.
And I think they would accommodate him because it would have been in everybody's best interest for that to go. So just basically, I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, you know, like when you're selling a house. We, you know, a lot of times when we're trying to liquidate assets for estate or for some type of reason, the seller of the house has this unrealistic viewpoint on the value of their home for whatever reason, emotional attachment or whatever. And a lot of times when you hold on to that asset because you have an unrealistic view of the true value of that asset, you end up spending more money because you incur more costs, you incur more utilities because you can't assess the market properly.
Right.
So just sort of a lesson in negotiation. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Greg. He's got a question regarding medical billing. Hey, Greg, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Hey, morning, guys. Good morning.
Hey, Greg.
I have a question about a doctor's obligation to give you some kind of idea of a cost of a service before they perform it. One of my kids just had recently had a surgery and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All good. It's all good. But so 2 months later, we get a bill, or not a bill, but a notification from our insurance company that they're refusing to pay for something additional that the doctor just kind of mentioned in passing. Turns out they're billing my insurance company like $200,000.
Wow.
For and it's listed on the billing a 15-minute monitoring of something.
Right.
So what's
what obligation do they have
around that? Yes.
Well, I mean, clearly, if you ask, they would have the duty to tell you, and they should have some sort of pricing guidelines. Again, I think when you have insurance that has negotiated a managed care contract with that provider. So if your insurance company has a contract with that provider, or that provider is part of a group or a hospital, whatever, they have
the network.
What's that?
It was in network, facility. Yes.
So they will have that healthcare provider will have a duty to comply with the guidelines from that insurance company. And so if the insurance company is not paying for the procedure because it is not covered, if it was like an elective type procedure, then that would be something different. You know, then they're not going to be forced to go pay for a nose job or something, right? But
if
there's some medical necessity for that, then your insurance company should pay it, or the you would not be responsible for it, because part of the contract that they provide with the medical provider is that they will pay it. And of course, you're going to have your deductibles and you're going to have your out-of-network things. But if you're in-network and you've met your deductible amount for a medical procedure or for the calendar year, then you wouldn't be responsible for any further payment. Or depending on your coverage, if it's a 80-20, if it's a, you know, whatever you might have to pay beyond your deductible.
You would only be responsible
for that. Now, the other part of the equation is the doctor's office or the medical provider will have to perform or bill reasonably. It has to be reasonable for those services. And so, you know, depending on what other services are around the state in the local area, and you can sometimes find those amounts from the workers' compensation law. There's a utilization review
guidelines.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's, you know, it's kind of sui generis specific to workers' comp, but it's not a bad baseline to look at what a particular procedure cost might be. You know, you look up the billing code and see what the average cost is, and that's what those costs are typically reduced to. So they may be, you know, listen, a lot of these physicians and a lot of these pharmaceutical companies especially will do what they can to charge the most that they can charge, and then we'll see what the insurance company is going to pay. And if they agree to pay it, you know, great. But I don't think you're going to have any liability for those
charges. Yeah, so this is just crazy. A $200,000 bill, a billing that was never discussed prior. This is crazy. But this happened, a much lesser extent, happened to me before. I get gout. I go to a foot doctor, podiatrist, out in Metairie, and I basically get a steroid shot into my toe. Well, my insurance company gets a bill for $8,000.
Right.
Was unbelievable.
Did you have to go to a particular clinic, or was in the office?
No. Well, here's the deal. I was in the office, and I said, okay, we're going to bring you upstairs and give you a shot. So they bring you upstairs, and all of a sudden, you're in a new facility.
Right. Right.
And they didn't tell you that. They don't discuss that prior. But it's like, surprise.
Right.
An $8,000 bill. Now, like you said, you were dead on. I didn't have to pay it. But the exchange with the doctor's office was ridiculous. Said, oh, we just bill the insurance, and if they pay it, fine. If they don't, then we just waive the fee. How does that work, and how do we get into that business?
Right. Exactly. We just waive the fee if they don't pay it. And that's the problem with, a lot of people want to blame insurance companies, insurance rates, and everything else. But, you know, quite often these doctors and medical providers, chiropractors, you name it. And I'm not saying all, certainly not all, but very many will charge what they can charge and inflate the bill beyond what's reasonable. And the insurance company maybe pay a little bit more, pay a percentage of it, whatever. And they see what they can slip past the guy sitting behind the desk paying the bills.
That's crazy. Well, Albert, don't be surprised if you get a call from me in another week or two.
All right, got it.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for the call. Let's go to a break. Doug Cintari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. All right, we're back. Doug Cintari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to Derek. He's got a question regarding contract negotiations. Hey, Derek, you're on all things legal with Doug Cintari and Albert Nico.
Hey, Doug. I walked in, turned my call in, and you was talking about contract negotiations for positions of leverage and understanding. And you mentioned Anthony Davis, and, you know, it just kind of like broke my heart because I think he hit his spot on. I don't know what the hell his agent was telling him. Not just the fact of, and that's what I want to talk to you about, not just the fact of, going public, but the money. If you're guaranteed five years for $220 million and the other people can only guarantee you 4 years or $180 million, and you're going to leave $40 million on the table to chase, I don't know, a ring or whatever. And then you're talking about maybe some Hollywood stuff, but you're always playing second fiddle. That's the thing about it. You're playing second fiddle to, I don't know if it's LeBron or whoever else they're bringing there. You're playing second or third fiddle. And you could have the city all to yourself. Now, you talk about a leverage standpoint. You know, Drew Brees, because he has the city all to himself, there's nothing he can't ask for.
Right.
So, maybe you can understand and appreciate what his agent was telling him, that he can get in L.A., that he can't get in New Orleans. I mean, we do have Hollywood productions here as well. So always being second fiddle and leaving $40 million on the table when you can run your own city, I've never understood. I didn't understand it from Chris Paul's standpoint, and I don't understand it from this standpoint.
Well, one's youth, but the second aspect of it for what you bring up, it's more than $40 million because – we do have a personal income tax in Louisiana, but the mother of all personal income taxes are in New York and California.
Yeah, the state income tax.
Yeah. So, one like Dwight Howard, when he was between the Lakers and the Rockets, Texas didn't have, Houston Rockets didn't have a state income tax. And the offers were comparable, but the Rockets sold him and said, you're not going to have to pay $22 million more in state income tax. You would have to pay if you went to California. So that $40 million figure is probably closer to $50, $55 million, which that's a personal decision. But as Shaq said, he said, I'm not leaving $55 million on the table.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of factors. I mean, he's his own person. He makes his own decisions. I don't think being young, easily influenced, I don't think he was able to assess all the factors in making that decision. And he was highly influenced by probably highly emotional basis and not so much factual and cognitive basis. And you're right. I mean, it does make a difference. Well, you go out to California and it's like...
Yeah, but you know, our own Bobby Hebert kind of went through that. If you recall, you know, he left the Saints and went to Atlanta. And, you know, instead of, like you said, staying here, and he's been able to resurrect that, right? Because he's been able to come back and be part of the whole WWL process. And
there's more to that story, because what ultimately the Saints wanted to sign him for what Atlanta signed him for. It's just the Saints sort of sat on their hands. And I'll tell you the difference. Jim Finks was old school at the time, and he had a real difficulty with this free agency stuff.
Right.
And so he had a phenomenal career, and I'm not being critical of him, but at the tail end of his career when it came to free agency, a la Steve Walsh,
yeah,
he just didn't handle it right because he came
from the old school.
And I think if there was probably,
but you know, Bobby could have been the Archie Manning, you know, stay here throughout the whole time, be that person.
But also he made court precedent.
And of course, Archie got booted. He didn't leave voluntarily.
But he also made court precedent on. He was one of the people who was very helpful to the players,
right?
In having CBA and the court and the rulings in the court cases. Scared the NFL as far as antitrust concern, where they gave a lot of concessions to the players and got the deal done. So I mean, there was a lot to that, and I'm sure Bobby would you know, he'll tell you the story that basically the Saints it was tragic because
But once again, it was kind of behind the scenes negotiations, these things that may not been the best thing for his career. Now, for the money, you know, I think he did fine, and he played well. And you know, Bobby's a great player. He played well in Atlanta, and
well,
brought them
made
some success.
He went to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, that's
Atlanta,
what I'm saying. So. Brought them some success, but I'm just saying that you know you can't always be a homer and stay. You know, I mean, you look at Montana did the same thing. He's still a San Francisco 49er, but he ended up going to KC.
Yeah, I understand
it just,
that.
It happens. Typically at the end of your career.
I think the biggest problem with Anthony Davis wasn't the fact that he wants to go to Los Angeles. It's that he blew up the team for 40 games over his selfish and ambitions, where he could accomplish both objectives. He could accomplish the objectives of being moved and keeping the team intact for the rest of the season and playing hard and making a possible playoff run. But there you go. All right.
Let me tell you, there's a lot of talent on that team, too. A lot of talent. We're going to be back. We got a few calls. Glenn, Ed, Patrick, you guys hang on the line. We got to take a CBS update.
And we're going to be on till 10:30 because LSU plays first pitch at 11. Pre-game starts at 10:30 in Athens, Georgia for the rubber game. So we're going to a CBS News update. We're going to local news. So we'll be back in about 4 minutes on all things legal. So stay tuned. All right, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, you weekend lawyers. Before we get to law, the Duke-Central Florida game will be interesting with Taco Fall, who is 7-6 and going against Duke. And I'm sort of rooting for Central Florida.
It'd be fun.
I'd rather play Central Florida and Duke.
In that bracket, right.
So he's 7-6. Yep. He moves around okay.
Yeah, he was talking a little smack, saying that, you know, I'm not going to let Zion pull some sort of ESPN highlight on me. He's going to have to.
Zion's a whole foot shorter than him. Because Zion's really 6'6". I mean, he plays big, but he's only 6'6", 6.5". So that'll be a fun game, 4:15 today. All right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Glenn's. Let's go to who are we going to? We'll go to Ed.
Ed texted, I think, about the fence question.
Hey, Ed, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Hi, guys. Enjoy y'all's show.
Okay.
You helped me with my trees. My neighbor finally
turned.
Oh, good.
I got fence question.
Did you send a text earlier?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, one, my back fence, the house was sold in the back, and, you know, it's behind my garage. I'm not paying attention. So within a matter of a few days, I went back there and I got a new fence put up.
Okay.
What they did, they took my fence, the fence that was there, they took that down, and they didn't change the stringer. They just put the new fence onto the old stringer, change the board facing to their side, which I really don't care. It's behind my garage. But my fence is 2 inches inside my property line because I built the house and I did it that way.
Right.
So I could make the decision of which way to board. One of my neighbors didn't want to pay half, okay?
Uh-huh.
The next question is, the other fence, I wanted to put a mud board, you know, when we when we redid it after Katrina. The neighbor didn't want you to do it. She didn't like the sight of it. So since the fences are on my property, do I get to make the decisions of which way the boards go and how I want to do it next time I do it?
Yes. If you can establish that the fence is on your property, you built the fence, you own the fence, right?
Okay.
If a fence that's on a boundary line, it's presumed to be common unless you can establish some sort of proof that it's not common, that you built it and it's yours and you paid for it. So if you paid for it yourself, you're entitled to do with it whatever you want. If you split the cost, or if it's on the common border, let's say it's a cinder block fence that's been there for before both of you even bought the property, and you really can't tell who built it, then it's presumed to be common. But you do have the right, for a common fence, to request your neighbor to pay half for repairs and construction of a new fence.
Okay, let me ask you this.
But the fact that it's on your property line and you can establish that you built it to begin with, it's your fence, and technically they would have had no right to do what they did in terms of tearing it down and building it again on their side.
So if they go in, the neighbor I'm talking about, they went in half on the fence after Katrina.
Uh-huh.
So if they paying half of it, she wanted to flip a coin, you know, which way the boards go.
Right.
So does she have that right to do that, even though it's my fence? My poles or whatever.
Well, is it time to rebuild it? Is that what you're saying?
It's getting close by another few years.
You know, one thing you may be able to do is check the poles themselves. You may be able to put a piece of rebar, fill them with concrete or something, and make them a little more sturdy, and then and check with the fence people about it. And you can put those fence boards on both sides. You know, and
then
then just put stringers on both sides, longer bolts, and then you have a gap in between.
Let me ask you a quick question, and then I'll let you go.
Uh-huh.
The fence in the back where the contractor went ahead and put it up and reversed the bolt to their side. Actually, now because you got 3 inches, but the fence is on their property line. It's my poles.
Right.
Do I still own the fence?
That's a good question. I think
all my poles.
Yeah, it's your poles. I mean, he really didn't have a right to do that since you put it up. But you know, the longer it goes, I think the harder it's going to be to convince some justice of the peace or judge that, hey, look, you know, I got a problem with it now. You know,
give me back my poles.
Okay. Yeah. And then one other question. I promise I'll let you go.
That's all right.
After Katrina, they took one of my fences. And the guy didn't want to dig up the poles with the concrete. You know, everything was waiting. Everything was quick.
Right.
So he moved my fence in about 6 inches and put new poles and new fence. It's fine. But
moved it in into his property line or yours?
Mine. So actually, I got 6 inches. The fences don't line up in the back. One 6 inches further in than the property line. The one that's on a property line is on my property is correct. When they put the new fence, they moved it in 6 inches.
Right. I would maybe make a stink out of that. How long ago has that been? After Katrina?
Katrina.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, you know, the longer they possess that little, you know, they could maybe make an argument one day, and I doubt that they will for such a small amount, but they could make an argument that, you know, it's that 6 inches now belongs to them.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's 30 years down the road, but, you know.
They could do that?
Yeah, but, you know, your question is, did they get a survey? You know, did they get a permit and all that sort of thing, which you have to do if you get a permit. They'll make you get a survey and determine that boundary.
I came and the fence was moved. I said, why did you do that? And he said, well, we couldn't dig up the concrete and all that, so we just moved it in 6 inches.
Yeah, notice how he moved it in 6 inches your way and not his, right?
Yes, because I was painting, you know, you're moving on my property.
Exactly, exactly.
So, well, thank you all. Appreciate
all right,
it.
All right, my man.
All right, take care,
all right,
man.
Let's go to a break.
We'll be back with our phone calls.
All right, right after this brief timeout on All Things Legal. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. Doug Cesare, Albert Nico. If you need to call a law firm, Nico and Cesare, you call us at 504-837-1304, 504-837-1304, and check us out on Facebook, Nico and Cesare, or Albert's webpage or my page. You can see us live. And we got Glenn, who's on the phone about boat purchases. You know, it's the two happiest days for a boat owner,
right?
Huh? The day they buy it, the day they sell it. All right, let's go to Glenn. Hey, Glenn, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cesare and Albert Nico. Glenn.
Hello, Glenn.
Glenn's not there. Let's go to Patrick. Patrick's got a question regarding money in escrow. Hey, Patrick, you and All Things Legal with Doug Cesare and Albert Nico.
Hello, Patrick.
Getting the call, and I actually appreciate you guys going on the air and giving free advice because not many lawyers do that.
Don't call us on Monday.
That's right.
It ain't free on Monday.
No. That's why I'm calling on a Sunday. Okay, here is the question and the dilemma that I'm in. So I'm not going to name the company, but I signed up last year with a Fortune 500 insurance company. Very highly rated. Passed all the tests, did all the tests. Boy, and those tests were hard. You got to go in a little room and you got to pass this test and this test and this test. But
right.
Anyway,
right.
That's neither here nor there. But part of their contract, which I did not get a copy of, said that they would keep my money in escrow. They would keep my money in escrow until I hit a certain period of...
Keep what money in escrow?
Your commissions?
My commissions, okay. Yes, sir. Yeah, they would keep my commissions in escrow until I had, proven myself with the... commissions that I can make. Well, the lowest level of proving yourself was a first year commission of $5,000. Okay.
Right.
Which seemed kind of moderate. My first deal, I made $26,000 in commission. So I'm pretty much blew that out the water.
Right.
And then now they're saying that, we still got to hold it in escrow because you need two more contracts. It doesn't matter if it's a dollar contract or a $10 contract.
So you got to sell three. You got to sell three. Yeah, you got to sell three contracts and not just one.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what they're telling me. So I did two contracts and, now they're telling me I got to do another one, even though I blew all of the prerequisites out the water.
Well,
my question is they're giving me a timeline to do this? And if that timeline expires, which is in about a month and a half, do I still get my money?
Well, it would seem, and again, if there's some sort of written contract that they provided you, then the terms of that contract are going to apply. But if you're entitled to a commission, it seems like that the commission, again, without seeing the documents, it seems like that the commission would be earned as your wages because you sold it and they benefited from it, and that was part of the deal. So right. It seems like you should get at least those commissions, but they may not keep you on as an employee because you didn't sell three contracts within a certain period of time.
But you have to read the contract because you may have contracted out your right to receive those commissions set forth.
I would still try to fight that, though.
How do I formally request to see these contracts because they just made me sign, and they said,
HR and just get copies of it.
Because you could have contracted your right out of those commissions under those circumstances.
Are you being paid a salary, too, or is it strictly commission?
No, sir.
That's what I'm saying.
I think they would have to pay you those commissions,
but they may not keep you on as an employee.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
But get the documents that'll probably address that situation that you're having right now. But thanks for the call. Wish you best of luck.
I highly appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you much. Okay,
absolutely.
Let's go to Glenn's. Got a question. Hey, Glenn's back with his boat. Hey, Glenn, you and All Things Legal.
Hey, you can hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you, brother.
Can hear you now.
You hear me now? All right. I have a boat. My wife and I went in half with her son, and we borrowed $125,000. He sold his boat for $125,000, and we bought it.
Okay.
How's it titled? How's it titled? In both y'all's name or one of y'all's name?
It's in both.
Okay.
His name and our name.
Okay, good. Continue.
And so wait, so you each put up 125. He traded his in, and you put up 125, or it's 125 total?
No, we both put 125. It's 250,000
okay.
total.
Okay. All right. 250. All right.
And it's a big freezer boat.
Okay.
Right? And we paying a note on it, which he's supposed to be paying, and he's going out and he's selling the shrimp and all, and he's lying to us and telling us that he ain't making no money and all that. And we was wondering, what can we legally do? Can we seize the boat, throw him off the boat, or make him?
Well, let me ask you, do you have some sort of contractual arrangement as to splitting the profits, splitting the payments of the boat for the note, et cetera?
Or division of labor.
And then do you have an LLC formed, some sort of operating agreement that sets forth both parties'
obligations?
Yeah, and responsibilities and rights, et cetera.
Or is it a handshake?
No, we don't have that.
Not
in
writing.
But he knows that right. He's supposed to be paying us.
Well,
because we're paying over $2,000 a month for this boat, you know, and he's running it and all of that, but he's not telling us what he's making. And
I think you got a couple options. One, if you want to get out the boat with him, you could actually file a proceeding to partition the boat and sell it and say, look, I don't want to own it with you. Let's just sell it and get our money. And number two, in connection with that proceeding, you could add it to this, or you file your own proceeding and say, hey, look, we had an oral contract, and these are the terms and conditions, and he's not living up his terms. The problem is, since it's not in writing, the judge is going to look at you, look at your son, and try to figure out what's going on. And
right.
he'll
a lot of times when you have those oral contracts, you can look at the history of the parties.
Right.
Yeah, well, look, this is how we've done it. Here's the billing. Here's what we did. Here's the receipts he showed us. We sold the shrimp. We split the profits. Here's that paper trail to show what our agreement really is, if you have such a thing. Look at tax returns, look at, you know, books and records of the company, if there is a company.
But the problem is, it's not as well defined as if it was in writing.
Exactly.
So there's a greater,
no question,
greater range of probabilities that would occur. And a lot of it's going to go to the judge, sort of just looking at both parties and says, would make sense here.
Yeah. And again, I think Doug's got the better suggestion. If you know the guy's lying to you, he's not catching shrimp, he's, you know, burning a lot of fuel and you're not seeing any profits, you don't want to be in business with him anyway. So I would file what's called a petition to partition the property and have the boat sold on the open market and be done with it, and get your money out of it, or pay off your portion of the note.
And move on. Now, in a partition, you can add some claims saying, before we split up the money, we would like to have some of the money allocated to this because of a breach of contract or breach of obligation. You know,
yeah.
Assuming there's a lot of
equity in the boat.
Yeah, you can wrap that up in one if there's equity in the boat, yes.
Yeah, what we're trying to do now is we're trying to sell it, but, you know, it don't sell overnight.
Right.
And
right.
We found out from the doc that he made like $11,000 in the last 2 months, and he's telling us he only made $300.
Right.
You know, so
right,
yeah.
And this is who your?
It's my stepson, my wife's son.
Uh huh.
But he did right all before. Now he's just around the wrong people, lying.
Right.
And
right.
He's trying to cheat us out and everything. And you know, I just put out $6,000 to get the compressor for the freezer.
Yeah.
Fixed, you know. And
right.
he seems like we owe it to him instead of, you know, oh, he's trying to beat us out. I'm just one of the two, you know.
Okay. Yeah. I know it's family, but it's always good to get it in writing, especially when it's family, because when it's family, just people may not just remember what the agreement is. I mean, in this situation, it looks like he's got issues. Maybe he's gambling. Maybe who knows what he's doing. His money's disappearing.
All right, let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert. Yeah, thanks for the call. Let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief time out. We're back. Let's go to Greg. We got about a minute. Real quick, Greg, what you got?
Yeah, Greg, if we can't get you, we can, you know, you can hold on and we'll get you back.
Real quick, I bought a piece of property about 9 years ago. And when I bought the property, I bought it without a survey. And my neighbor, there was a fence on the property that encroached what appeared to be the property line, like 2.5 feet in by about 40 feet deep.
Right.
Well, I had the property surveyed last year, and it appears that, the survey shows that that fence is on my property. So now I have issues with people trespassing across the yard. So I want to go ahead and put up a fence along the original or the actual property line.
You can get them to move it if it hadn't
been 10
years.
Do you know how long that fence has been there? That's the question.
It's been there a long time.
Oh, like well, over you might 30 have years? A problem. All right, well, hang on, call us after the break. We're going for a news break. We'll see you in about 10 minutes on All Things Legal.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.